Now, the future of diverting water from Lake Michigan to bring clean drinking water to the city of Waukesha. This water diversion project was years in the making, and installation of about 35 miles of pipe is underway. But a lawsuit brought by the village of Waukesha is the latest challenge in this complicated water project. How do you feel about Waukesha piping in water from Lake Michigan? Have you followed this project over the years? What questions do you have? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dan Dukniak is general manager of Waukesha Water Utility. Dan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. You've been working on this water issue for like a better part of 18 years. It's a long time, Dan. Explain why Waukesha's municipal drinking water needs to come from Lake Michigan.
Well, our current, good morning, everyone, and thank you for having me on the show. Our current water supply comes from the deep aquifer in the southeastern Wisconsin, and our wells are about 2,000 to 2,200 feet deep underground, and there's a thick layer of shale, basically a thick rock, several hundred feet down that prevents water from naturally percolating through the soil and recharging that deep aquifer. So when we pull water from there, we're causing this drawdown in the aquifer. And years of overuse by all of southeastern Wisconsin created this massive drawdown. And when you draw down the water, you get into older water and levels of contaminants increase. And we are in violation of the radium standard. And we need to bring our water into compliance with the radium standard. And we had over 20 years of research and analysis. We looked at 14 different alternatives. This is one of the most studied plants I have ever seen. We put together an application that we looked at that had Lake Michigan as the most reasonable alternative for us. It was the most sustainable for the future. It was the most protective for the environment, and it was the best solution for our ratepayers. So we worked with the DNR. We created an environmental impact statement. We worked through that process. The application was, like I said, was over 3,000 pages. They believed that we had an approvable application. They put that application through to the Great Lakes Compact Council, which is made up of the eight Great Lakes states in southeastern Wisconsin, around the Great Lakes, and the two Canadian provinces that border the Great Lakes also provide input. We needed unanimous approval from all of those Great Lakes states governors, and we had to work through that process. Ultimately, in June 2016, all of those eight Great Lakes states, Democrats and Republicans, voted in support of our application, and we were allowed to access Great Lakes water and bring Great Lakes water to Waukesha for a long-term sustainable supply for our customers.
So it's $286 million at last check. If the project is stalled in any way, or as the project goes on, might you be faced with cost overruns or have to rebid certain aspects of the water pipeline system? Is $286 million a firm number?
Well, more importantly, is the court order that we're under to make sure that we're in compliance by September of 2023. If we're not going to meet certain goals within the construction timeline, we're going to be forced to design and install radium treatment at additional wells. And that could add, you know, significant cost, $4 to $5 million to our project above and beyond the $286 million that we're talking about right now. Beyond that, there are, you're correct, construction delay costs that we could have claims by the contractor for delays in obtaining permits. Construction, you know, could be delayed, again, forcing us to put in that unnecessary temporary installation. Because when we negotiated this agreement with the Department of Justice, at the end of the day, they said, you will be compliant by September of 2023, whether it's with Great Lakes water or whether it's with putting in treatment on additional wells. So we're in a time crunch right now. And these delays, you know, while some of them have been expected along the way, there's been challenges that we've had along the way, you know, sometimes are unnecessary.
Well, one challenge: on January 29th, the village of Waukesha files a lawsuit against this water diversion project. What does it allege? What are they arguing here?
So our pathway or our route that we studied for a number of years goes through the city of Waukesha, through the village of Waukesha, and a number of other communities. And we have negotiated intergovernmental agreements with a bunch of these communities. We negotiated an intergovernmental agreement with the village of Waukesha, and we identified two areas where they had, where we went through the village where it was under village jurisdiction. There were other areas in the village of Waukesha that we discussed during the negotiations, and it was ultimately determined that those were under the jurisdiction of either the Department of Transportation or the county. Ultimately, when it came time to install the pipes through those areas, the village made a claim that we needed to get a permit from them also, and that they had jurisdiction over the corridor that went through the state highway and the county highway. So they filed a lawsuit against us, and they requested that the judge issue a temporary restraining order to stop construction. And that's where we had the hearing. We actually had the hearing on that and the decision on that on Monday. So they moved for the temporary restraining order. We went through the court. We briefed it. We provided a brief to the court. They provided a brief to the court. Ultimately, the judge ruled in our favor. He did not issue the temporary restraining order. There were a number of components that they had to prove. He made comments on each of those components and ruled in our favor. He also questioned their motives. Another ancillary story we have
and
going on.
We need to just pause right there as we talk with Dan Dukniak, General Manager of Waukesha Water Utility, about the water diversion project, switching the city's municipal water source to Lake Michigan. Is this a viable solution to clean drinking water? Is the lawsuit against this diversion project justified? What do you want to see come of it? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Now, Waukesha's vision to fix its water contamination problem and pipe in Lake Michigan water, this $286 million water plan, is years in the making. What questions do you have about the status of this diversion project, the quality of Waukesha's water, or the location and plans for pumping stations and pipelines? Conversation here, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dan Dukniak is General Manager of Waukesha Water Utility, and he stays with us. So, Dan, explain, what stage are you in at laying the pipe, at building out these pumping stations? Where are you at?
Well, that's a good question. We're actually moving right along. There are six different contract packages that we have. We have five of those are under our control, and then one of those the city of Milwaukee is constructing. We have bid out and awarded four of the five contracts that are under our control, and the fifth one is actually out for bid right now. So hopefully by this summer, all the contract packages will be bid out and awarded and will be fully under construction. But there is pipe going in the ground on the water supply side, the water main bringing the water from Milwaukee to Waukesha, and also the water that is going to be returned, the return flow pipeline, the water going back to the Root River in the city of Franklin. So construction is underway. They're out there digging as we speak, and it's a very exciting time here in Waukesha.
How many permits, how many layers of approval have you had to get to proceed with this pipeline system project? Have you counted how many permits?
I don't know them.
Have you kept track?
And I laugh because it is over. There's well over 100 permits that have been needed to be obtained by us or by the contractors. The big ones, though, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Wetlands and Waterways permits, the DNR authorization through the Public Service Commission. There's more, and the diversion permit are more of the bigger permits that we had to get. And then there's all of your local permits that we have.
How much will water rates change for this project for residents of Waukesha?
So we have told our residents all along that rates are going to either double or triple. We're going to be somewhere, we're projecting we're going to be somewhere between there. We have been fortunate enough to work with our federal legislators Senators Johnson and Baldwin and Congressman Sensenbrenner to obtain a WIFIA loan through the federal government. That's a water infrastructure loan for the water portion of this project. So that was for about half the project, and it's at 1.16% over 38 years. So that will help save our residents money. That's really cheap money for us. And then we're funding the rest of it through some low interest state loans through the Clean Water Fund, which is on the wastewater side. So we've been able and lucky enough to be able to get those low interest loans, which it came in below our projections, the interest rate and the amortization period. And we're hopeful that with the bid prices that we've been seeing recently, that we'll be able to bring it in closer to doubling rather than tripling. But, you know, with these projects, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of construction to be done yet, and you never know what you're going to run into. So you can never, you know, have a really good feel for it until you're done with the construction.
Yeah, we only have less than a minute left, but what is the effect of this litigation from the village of Waukesha on this project?
Well, again, the lawsuit continues, even though they weren't successful with a temporary restraining order. The lawsuit continues, and we don't know what that effect is yet. We don't know because we don't know what the result of the lawsuit's going to be. But like I said, we have to meet that September 2023 deadline regardless. And we have a great team of consultants, and I have a great staff at the utility that is working on this project tirelessly. And we're going to do our best to make sure we meet all the goals and deadlines and make sure Waukesha has that water that it needs by September of 2023.
Anything that you'll do once you get this entire project completed and when you see that water coming through those pipes from Lake Michigan?
I think I might sit back and have a nice cocktail or maybe even go on a vacation somewhere warm with all this snow. I need to get away from here.
Dan, thank you for joining us.
Have a great day.
You too. Dan Dukniak, General Manager of Waukesha Water Utility. Ahead this hour, road salt keeps our highways, our driveways, our sidewalks clear of ice, but it also seeps into our groundwater. What questions do you have about salt and brine runoff? 800-642-1234. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. Now, dozens of winter weather events hit our state each year, as you know, and here come the salt trucks. These are figures from the State Department of Transportation. They use an average of 526,000 tons of salt and 14,000 tons of sand per season. Other techniques include pre-wetting and de-icing. Do you think the state is using too much salt on roads? Have you taken steps to use less salt on your sidewalks? What works for you? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Hillary Dugan is an assistant professor at UW-Madison's Center for Limnology, where she studies lakes, including lakes here in Wisconsin. Hillary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to be on.
So what is the environmental damage caused by using salt on roads, salt on our highways, salt on our sidewalks, our driveways, our front steps? What is the impact?
Yeah, we're definitely putting down a lot of salt into the environment. And what we have to remember is that, you know, no one's picking that salt up and it's all going to end up in our fresh water. So whether or not that's running off into your local stream or river, into a lake, or eventually seeping into groundwater, you know, none of that salt that we're putting down is being removed.
It's not being removed. Where is it going?
So it's going into our water eventually. And we've seen that over the decades of salting, we're getting higher levels of salinity in a lot of freshwater environments. Obviously, those are worse in sort of bigger urban centers, but we do see it statewide.
We've talked about more cities and towns in Wisconsin spreading brine, this mixture of salt and water on roads instead of the rock salt. How has this trend played out?
Yeah, so that's something that we're seeing more of. And the reason for that is that it ends up using a lot less salt. So instead of putting down rock salt, which is solid rock that you're hoping it's going to sort of mix with snow and create a liquid brine, instead, we're seeing the Department of Transportation put down liquid brine both before snow starts to in a way it works the same way, but you end up using less salt because salt's not bouncing off the road into the ditch, it's sticking to the road. And so in places that use a lot of liquid brine, we're seeing salt reductions of almost 50% in total salt use. And that salt reduction is, you know, it's good for the environment, it's good for the budget of the state. And so, you know, most counties are getting on board with liquid brine application, and we're going to see more of that in the future.
When you're out testing the water on Wisconsin lakes, can you actually pick up the salt front? Can you link it back to road salt when you examine and take samples and specimens of the water?
So there are other salt sources other than road salt, although all of the sort of salt budgets that have been done in the region, road salt is definitely the sort of the biggest culprit of human salt inputs. There are salt inputs from agriculture, and water softeners can be a really big salt source. Although, especially with water treatment facilities, we sort of know exactly where that discharge is taking place. But what we do see are big spikes in salinity, especially in streams in the sort of the spring months when we start to see a lot of snow runoff. And so that's a pretty obvious sign that it's related to road salt when it's coming in, you know, during melt events in, say, March and April. Whereas other sources of salt, you'd expect to see sort of more throughout the year. So that's a pretty good indication that road salt is the dominant driver of these trends.
What do the streams do with the salt? How does it break down, or does it, in the environment?
So salt dissolves into its kind of constituent ions. And for the most part, the salt we use is sodium chloride, which is the same sort of salt we buy to eat. And so it dissolves into sodium ions and chloride ions. And those generally are pretty passive. They're not being taken up by too much in the environment. Mm-hmm. Which is good and bad. It's good in that it doesn't stick around. It'll eventually flush out. But it's bad because a lot of freshwater organisms can be, it makes it harder to kind of do cellular processes when there's too many ions in the water. You have to remember that all of the native, flora and fauna in Wisconsin are adapted to freshwater environments. And as we start pushing some of those rivers, and lakes to, you know, saltier concentrations, there are organisms that are, you know, get really stressed by those concentrations, and it's a lot harder for them to survive. And that, you know, it's not true of all organisms. There's some species that are more adaptable, but we will start to see a change in sort of that native aquatic ecosystem as salt concentrations increase.
What is the impact of using sand? Why can't we just switch over to sand?
So sand provides really good traction. Sand is not a melter. So salt works really well because it actually depresses the freezing point of water down to a certain point. We've actually seen temperatures in the last few weeks where it's been too cold for sodium chloride to melt effectively. And sand's a good alternative because it provides that a good traction on snow. The problem comes when we sort of oscillate between these freezing and thawing temperatures where we get a lot of ice formation. You know, we've been actually pretty lucky in the last few weeks. I mean, people might disagree with this cold snap, but what we've seen are temperatures where things just stay cold and frozen. And we, you know, in here in Madison, we have a lot of snow covered and snow packed streets that are actually pretty safe to drive and walk on. And that's because there isn't a lot of ice. But once we start seeing ice formation in the coming weeks, as we get slightly warmer temperatures, that's where salt's really effective. And so, we have to be a little bit more cognizant of trying to get that kind of that water off our streets before it freezes into ice, because, that's the danger.
Yeah. I'm going to reintroduce you here. Hillary Dugan, assistant professor at UW-Madison Center for Limnology, as we talk about how road salt affects our environment and especially waterways, the impact of sand. Do you think the state is using too much salt on the roads? Have you seen salt eat away at your car or your shoes? 800-642-1234 to join in. Hillary, there have been other alternatives to salt tried out in recent years. Polk County has spread cheese brine on its roads. The Minnesota Department of Transportation has used beet juice. What have you looked at with these alternatives?
Yeah, so those alternatives are definitely used. Those two are actually used for different reasons. So beet juice is pretty common. It's used because it's sticky and helps salt adhere to the roads. And so lots of places actually keep some beet juice on hand. It's an organic material, so it has some other environmental problems associated with it. And so we tend not to advise to use too much of it. Cheese brine is still a salt, so it's going to have the same environmental impacts. I guess the benefit of cheese brine is it's probably cheaper because it's leftover.
It's a waste product of the process of cheese making. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, normally you probably just dump that cheese brine down the drain. So if you can reuse it, that's a good thing. But it's still anything that's a brine is still going to be a salt product. And so those alternatives are still, you know, effectively having the same environmental problems that just normal salt would have. But we might be seeing more sort of reuse of waste products in the future, especially as salt prices, you know, start to skyrocket. Mm-hmm. And there's some other alternatives, different salt compounds. You can buy some acetate compounds at the store. Some of them get pretty expensive and aren't, you know, really economically viable at a large scale, but could be affordable at sort of a household cost. But there's, you know, salt is effective and it's pretty cheap. And so there's not really a great alternative other than trying not to use de-icers and trying to really just like get out there and shovel.
Well, let's pause here and bring in John in Highland. Hi, John. You're a farmer.
Yes, I am indeed. We live right along Highway 80 here by Highland, and we are seeing some negative effects on our farmland from the runoff from the road ditches. When salt is applied to soil, it takes the air out of the soil and it collapses the clay layers, which we have in much of our farmland in the state. And when it does that, the water cannot percolate down through the soil. So many of our road ditches are becoming so filled with salt that water is not percolating down. It's running off into the farmland. And we have probably a 3-acre piece right on one corner that we can no longer farm. It just grows up the grass. We make some hay off it. But it's become so logged with salt that it's no longer tillable for corn and soybean production.
And John, John, I'm going to just pause there and allow Hillary to respond there with this salt jam and John unable to even farm those acreage.
Yeah, I mean, what John said about how salt affects soil is absolutely true. And it's pretty devastating, especially when it's, you know, almost bad luck that you happen to be beside a highway where you are getting the brunt of that salt. As I said, you know, all the salt that is put down runs off to whatever happens to be beside the road. And so, you know, we salt stretches of highway at, you know, 300 pounds per lane mile. And so, yeah, your farmland is going to be getting hundreds and hundreds of pounds of salt every year. It's hard to reverse. I mean, we see this in other places, especially in the arid U.S., where you can get salinization of soil from irrigation. And so it's what's challenging then becomes, you know, whose fault is it? And there have been other cases in the United States of sort of both damage to cropland, but also damage to groundwater. Mm. And, you know, not only is that soil getting salty, but the groundwater is getting salty as well. And so,
which will affect wells.
Which will affect wells, and not just for human drinking water, but also for livestock drinking water and irrigation. So there's multiple problems that are, really pretty heartbreaking.
Well, very quickly, we only have a few seconds left, can you give us any tips as residents, homeowners, what we can do on our personal level to use less salt?
Well, I mean, especially if you live in a city and you're sort of responsible for clearing your sidewalk and driveway, take advantage of Mother Nature. Those bright sunny afternoons, a lot of that snow and ice sort of gets nice and mushy and is pretty easy to shovel off. Especially when we're all stuck at home, it's a good afternoon activity. There are times when it's still below freezing and the sun's out and it's warming things up nicely that it makes it pretty easy to clear, and you don't really need salt. Mm. If you look at your clear driveway and you see lots of salts, sweep it up. It's not doing anything anymore. It's just sitting there waiting for the next big rainstorm to wash it in to the stormwater sewer and down into our rivers and lakes. If you did put down too much, pick it up.
Hillary, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. It was a pleasure.
Hillary Dugan is an assistant professor at UW-Madison's Center for Limnology. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.